since this is essentially, it hasn't been for a while, but has often been a Brennan Lee Mulligan appreciation podcast.
Yes.
I just wanted to bring up a new thing that I discovered about Brennan Lee Mulligan today.
Tell me.
Brennan Lee Mulligan, noted D&D player, extraordinaire, improv performer, world builder, and nice person, it would seem, without being nauseating. Good-hearted soul, socialist, anti-capitalist. He was able to move to California. Do you know why he was able to move? I don't actually know where he comes from. But do you know why he was able to move to California and thence potentially find his fortune?
Yes. Da-da-da-da-dun.
Yeah. So I learned about that today, that he won $50,000 on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah. Yeah. He was already familiar with game shows before Sam made a mockery of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
I found the clip and I saved it so that Margaret and I can watch it, and we never got around to it. So I haven't seen it yet. But have you seen the clip?
No, I've only seen a screen grab. And he talked. He was on a podcast that's something to do with food and something to do with D&D. I don't quite know, but it was all clipped up on TikTok. Clipped up on TikTok. Title. And he was talking about it, described the question that he bowed out on as being quite the stinker and a very difficult one and an unfair one. He sounds like he was unfairly booted out, you know, he's got a good attitude, and I just thought that was lovely, because one of the other clips that was clipped up on TikTok was of him acknowledging luck and the importance of luck.
Yeah, that's a good trait to really amp up on and put in a lot of digits.
Yes, yes.
talking D&D for the listener. D&D, huh?
Yeah, it's a natural 20 on charisma. That sort of warmed my heart. Since we last spoke, dear listener, when we next speak, I will hopefully have some information about whether or not I'm going to join the leagues of the mentally medicated.
It's still up in the air.
It's still up in the air. I've had a recommendation from my guy. And that sort of blew me away a little bit. In a good way. And I see my GP on Monday. Yeah, so hopefully I will discover just how good pills are.
Pills are good.
Pills are good.
Pills are good. It feels good when you use the ketchup and the mustard at the same time.
You son of a bitch! And in the UK, we have a thing called the watershed, which is a term which you don't have in American TV because you're weird.
It's the moment when something changes. It's like a pinnacle moment.
Pivotal, perhaps?
Pivotal.
But definitely a moment where something changes. And what changes is the time when our regulator, broadcasting regulator, allows for the swearing on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 9 p.m. If films like Dumb and Dumber were shown pre-Watershed, as we would say, when that guy died, he would just say "son of a," and then his head would hit the thing, and then that was it. I don't know why I remember that, but I do.
Would it just that section be clipped out, or would it be muted, or would it be filled?
It would
on
just
with
be cut.
Cut.
Yeah. So
you just get choppy movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
That's funny.
But because we have a slightly different, some of our words like, it's weird the words we consider swear words versus the words Americans consider swear words. Yeah. And so there's an episode of Friends that's a little bit cut because Ross, I think, calls Chandler a bastard, and we that is not okay pre-Watershed.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
What's the Watershed title mean? Like, what is that? Is there are they up in the watershed? Like, what's a watershed, and why is that the term?
Well, you put it exactly right. Is that it is a moment when something changes.
Yeah, that's the description of what happens. But why is it named that?
Why do we use that word for? Yeah, because it obviously doesn't just appear to.
Is a watershed a thing? That
yeah, yeah, yeah. A watershed moment is yeah.
Well, yes, yes, I get.
But is a watershed a thing? Yeah, yeah. That's the question. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's look it up.
Yeah, I was just wondering if it just became a term, like they just picked that out of the hat and it's like, let's call it watershed. That's the moment.
A land where all the water that falls on it flows to a single point, such as a river, lake, or ocean.
Oh, the watersheds.
A watershed. Oh, oh yeah.
Where it all collects and then it's
not a shed.
Changes. It's not a shed.
It's not
sheds.
A shed full of water. That's, yeah.
It's not a shed. It sheds. Title.
It sheds. Tidal.
Tidal. Not title.
Oh, dear. Oh, Brendan.
Hey, that's
Brendan.
That's my name.
Brendan.
I feel like you're
Brendan.
Trying to get my attention.
Brendan!
Yes, sir.
What's going on?
I am going to see Gatsby's American Dream in Seattle this Saturday, and I'm super excited. Are you familiar?
Not even a little bit.
Gatsby's American Dream is a indie pop punk band from the 2000s.
Oh my God.
I don't know why we didn't.
My Achilles heel.
I don't know why we didn't talk about them in the in the List Envy episode.
Yeah,
they're literally my favorite band for, I don't know, almost a decade.
Huh.
And I feel like they're underrated and underknown about, and you didn't know about them. And so maybe I felt like, you know, we were trying to make a list of the top. I got way into my head about like what qualifies.
Do we consider top?
Yeah, it's like, is this for like all time for everybody or for just me and you and us? And they're like, anyways. So yeah, Gatsby's American Dream. I found out about them because they went on tour with Name Taken, who was previously a favorite band.
Yes.
And
I was just looking up to see if we'd had it as an honorable mentions, but I no longer have that in my show notes, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's a dishonorable that I didn't mention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, so when I was going to I was in Arizona going to the Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences getting my degree in audio engineering. Humble brag.
Yeah.
I was just constantly listening to the album Volcano by Gatsby's American Dream. And it is a concept album that, and I just love concept albums. Like having some sort of theme where all the songs come together and mean something, or there's a flow or a connection, like, It just, to me, it's like, this is thought out. There's a plan here, and that is beautiful. Even if it's not always executed well, but like, you know, Welcome to the Black Parade, of course, Sergeant Pepper's, and you know, all the concept albums.
The Hazards of Love.
So Volcano is, you know, it's yeah, I say, you know, but you don't know. It's because
that's what we say.
Because that's why we're talking about it.
You know,
it's lightly inspired by Pompeii, because one of the authors, Bobby Darling is his name.
Wow.
He had recently been, had recently seen another kids in schools presentation on Pompeii, and he was like, oh, that's really interesting. And so then he took that as like the main concept to also talk about relationships and masculinity, that how it grows and how it fails us, and but also had concepts of like record labels and greed, and yeah, there's all these themes in it that, like, to me as an adolescent, like, it perfectly made everything made sense. Everything was connected. It was all awesome. So at the time when I was listening to it, I could hear some connections between the songs. Like, they would use the same lyrics or some motifs or whatever in between songs, and every time they came up, I was just like, oh yes, oh yeah, that just tickles my insides. Mm-hmm. I love that so much.
I just realized we didn't, yeah, when we were listing concept albums, we didn't mention one that I think does need mentioning because it's in the genre.
Tell me.
American Idiot.
Oh, yes. Just,
I think that qualifies because stars of the sort of repeated motifs.
Yes.
Absolutely
qualifies. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
I just wanted to throw that one in.
I've seen the musical of that like three or four times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, by the original cast twice. I went down to see the original performance of that, and then I saw it in Seattle twice, I think. Mm. Or no, Seattle once and then Portland once. So good. Mm. Yeah, and the adapters, the people who adapted it, inserted a few of the B-sides like in certain spots where it could help things flow. And there was almost no dialogue. It was almost entirely performance and song, and it was just great. You could really follow it along, and it was good stuff.
Nice.
There tragically isn't a musical of Volcano. There should be. That'd be, oh, I see the world in a swirl of hues. And so yeah, it was my soundtrack for my degree. Like, it was just the song. Yeah. I was like singing along with it, even, you know, without listening to it. But while I was cleaning the tape deck to get ready for the next recording, I was just, singing along and probably annoying people. But I would slide the soundproof glass door closed. So at least in my little booth, hopefully I wasn't bothering too many people. But yeah, and I found out after I got obsessed with them, I found out that when I had seen Name Taken in Portland maybe 2 years earlier, they were the headliner. Gatsby's American Dream was the headliner. Mm-hmm. Name Taken was opening for them. In between them was Bear versus Shark, and they were kind of like the screamo band, and sure, I was not into it. And so I walked out, and I was hanging out with Name Taken on the streets of Portland, giving them my demo for the band. What was it? Ending Story.
Wow. Not behind that.
Yeah. it was, oh my gosh, we tried.
Yeah, sure.
It was bad, but we had a fun time. Mm. And then one of the guitar riffs that I'm playing is completely ripping off one of Name Taken's songs, and I handed it to them, and then I realized that after I walked away, I was like, then I came back to them, I'm like, I have to shamefully admit, I completely ripped off one of your riffs, and it's on this track, and I'm sorry, and thank you. And I will see myself out now. And they were like, no, dude, that's awesome. That's how everything is written, man. And so it was great. They were cool dudes. But yeah, then I didn't stick around for Gatsby's American Dream because Bear vs. Shark was so boring and screamy. And so I missed them, which is pretty, it made me feel sad later. Yeah. But now I get to see them.
Wicked.
I don't think checking my mental log of history and shows I've seen, I don't think I ever got to see them. Yeah, so they're doing a reunion show, a one-off show in Seattle. I think mostly live in Seattle. And because it's the 20th anniversary of Volcano. And you know, it's so funny because so Margaret and I just got this record player. And I was thinking, you know, we're kind of trying to only collect the albums on vinyl that, like, are super special and important to us, and not just have this huge library of vinyls, which we're actually already starting to collect a little bit too many. We got some wonderful gifts from Cameron, and we kind of took took more than he was like, we're getting rid of these, and you can have any of them you want. And we kind of went, oh, cool, we'll have that and that and that and that.
Yeah.
And then we got them, and I was like, oh, this is a lot. We're not going to listen to all these probably. So, yeah. So now we're gonna come through them. But anyways, I was sitting and I was thinking about what albums in my life, what would I want to sit and listen to on vinyl? And I was like, Volcano, I wonder if there's an album of Volcano. I have no idea. I never looked before. And I looked, and there was, because it was the 20th anniversary first pressing of Volcano on vinyl that had just came out maybe a couple weeks or months earlier. So, like, the timing was just insane to me. So kismet. And then and I was like, this is crazy. And so then I just kind of look a little bit more, and then I find out that Gatsby is having a reunion show.
I'm like,
I never would have found out if I hadn't been looking for the vinyl, because we just got this record player and I was trying to think about my favorite albums. Like, what in the world? This is so cool. So and Margaret isn't familiar with it, but she's coming along and she gets to experience it. And I love my live music. I love this album.
I also love,
I'm so excited
when, and it's been a while, but I remember going to see, like, I'd go and see a friend's band, and they, you know, because as one of the bands that I knocked around with, they were getting up a little bit, and they you know, they could headline a small gig, you know, a proper, you know, like, three band gig or whatever. And I remember them being supported by a band. I can't remember where they were from, possibly somewhere down south. And they were called Envy and Other Sins.
Nice.
And they had some music then on, probably via their website, because this is pre-Spotify by a few years. And I'd actually gone up to them because I'd said, I really like your music. And at the time, I was trying to get a bit of a line in building websites for bands.
Nice.
And I think they were like, we're cool with our website. And whatever. Yeah, no worries. But I bought their EP. And then in like 2009 or 2010, maybe 09, they came out with a full album. And I really like it. And I still play it. You know, it's still on my rotation. There's a couple of tracks that are just sort of in a couple of playlists and things, and it's one that I will just go back to. And they broke up, you know, shortly thereafter, like it was their one and done. But I never would have discovered them or thought about them or heard, you know, never would have, 'cause I've never heard about them since. Like, they never troubled any, you know, anywhere, which is, I guess, why they did one album and they quit. But they did this gig, and they were, you know, regarded well enough that they were able to get a recording studio together and make an actual album. And it's a good quality. It's well recorded. It's proper stuff and very listenable, and, like, could have done quite well, but just didn't make it. And, you know, really enjoyed that. And then in 2013, I went to see a band that I really like called The Cat Empire, who were an Australian band, and they were supported. So we turned up, me and my former boss, me and my former boss, it matters a little bit. I will say that we turned up and I had enjoyed some of the weed. And
I'm familiar.
I was quite then giddy when we walked in, and I heard this band playing, And I was like freaking out because I was like, I know this song. 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 And it was because Spotify had thrown it up to me at some point in like a random list of songs you might enjoy because you like this other band, which coincidentally is the band that I saw when I went to see, when I then happened upon Envy and Other Sins.
Funny.
And it, so, you know, Spotify was like, well, if you like that band, you'll probably like this stuff. And it's jaunty and it's got ukulele or banjo and it's got a bit of stuff in it and it's quite fun. And it was the one song. And I was like, eh, it's all right. Turned up and then, you know, this band called Flap are playing this song. And I'm like, oh, no, this song, another song. And proceed to just really enjoy the rest of the gig. Like, every song, really enjoyed it. Really great. Love their sound. It's kind of like jug band kind of, you know, a little bit of like Dixieland mixed with a little bit of like ska kind of vibes with a little bit of folk and Australian accents.
Wonderful.
Just a great sound. And enjoyed them. Then enjoyed the Cat Empire. Went home and then like next day bought the two albums, or bought the first album. Then briefly thereafter, there was the second album available. And then they split, like they very, you know, like 2014 or something like that. I was even on their mailing list because I was like, I want to see them again. And then the only email I ever received from their mailing list was that we're splitting up. Which was
a joke, but you're a little bit of a bad omen for.
It would seem that way. But like the serendipity of that stuff. It's wonderful. I saw the Cardigans at the V Festival in 2003 or four, and they performed one or two songs from their latest album, and I went home and I got the album and I really dug it because Love Fool is one of my, that's a song you'll know. And you know, really enjoyed that back in the day, but then to see them live, you know, new album, new set, really, really good. I love the serendipity of that kind of stuff. It's amazing what you might find that you really enjoy just because you just happened upon it, or like, you know, that thing that I've imparted to you, where when I'm in a new or unfamiliar space, follow
just
the
walk
music.
Walk towards the music. Yep.
Yeah, walk towards the music. You know, that like it never fails. You know, worst thing will happen, you'll hear something mediocre.
Yeah, and that's rare.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, I have a beautiful memory of being in Venice in 2007 with some friends and walking over a bridge and hearing this guitarist just sat on the bridge, on the brick, with his guitar playing, acoustic guitar playing Vincent by Don McLean. And it was beautiful. It was just, you know, beautiful. And it's Venice, and it's and the sun's gone down, and it's cool, and there's people milling around, but and there's just enough light, and it's kind of warm and just like kind of cozy, but also kind of outdoorsy, and this guy's just playing that, and I bought his CD, and like it was just it was a lovely little moment. I love it's moments like that that are just so choice.
Can I tell you another story?
Oh, please.
And this story will lead into my next story. and it's funny. So I'm going up to see Gatsby's in Seattle, in Washington, this weekend. Last weekend, I was also in Washington. Margaret and I did a little impromptu vacation to Port Townsend, which is towards the north end of Washington. It's about 4 hours drive. As we were driving up, about an hour in, we were listening to something. Didn't matter. It was some good stuff. I can't remember what it was now. But Margaret got the idea of, let's listen to Taylor Swift's entire discography in chronological order.
Woo!
And so with the 4 hour drive there, minus 1 hour, all of the driving we did in Port Townsend, plus some nice listening in the bath together, And then the 4 hours driving back, we got through about half of her discography. She puts out
she's prolific.
Lot of songs. But yeah, Port Townsend, adorable little town. Mm. Oh my gosh. So I'm gonna talk about how cute this is, but first we have to acknowledge and then put aside the genocide of the native peoples that were there before the white man came to ruin everything. Acknowledged. I'm sorry. And now I'm gonna talk about the cute things that are still there. It was a Victorian era, and the people that were starting things up there expected Port Townsend to be Seattle, to be the big hub of that area. And they were building this town to be enough for, at the time, 20,000 people, even though it was way smaller than that, but that was what the infrastructure they were trying to get. And because of complications with the railroad not making it all the way up there, and I guess the harbor being a bit too shallow and maybe some other complications, some flooding, it didn't pan out. And the money dried up, and all of these Victorian era buildings that they put up, nobody came to demolish them because the town wasn't big enough to continue working on. So it's now this little relic of that time period. The downtown area, it's like an upper downtown and a lower downtown, and there's just all these cute little buildings. And now, like, it's starting to grow again because, you know, roads and everything make things easier, individual cars. And now the town peaked at like 8,000 back in the day, and now it has a population of about 10,000, and so it's still at like half capacity, but now there's like modern money being put into it from state taxes and everything, and so they've got great road systems and awesome parks and, you know, facilities. The people there seem to really love the town. They've got a we happened upon their not a Saturday market, farmer's market. We happened upon the farmer's market, and it was a beautiful blend of people selling wares, people selling produce, and people selling food to eat right then. And it was like this great combination. And there's some people playing music, of course, and wine tastings and stuff, and there is this grocery store, Aldrich's, that had so many cool, like, just like a gift section, which was just this wonderful choice collection of cute things just that you want to have for yourself and that you want to give as gifts, and also all of the good from this area available grocery shopping needs. Like, we'd turn around and be like, oh, we get that all the time, or oh, we just found this at a different store, and oh, I can't believe they have that. And it was just like all these little things, and they have a coffee shop in there, and there's an upper balcony with a game store that has like D&D sessions every week. And like, we were there when the D&D people were meeting up, and there was like 10 to 15 people. There was a nice gathering of people playing D&D just on a Saturday, you know, and in Port Townsend, Washington, away from everything. So it was super cool. It was a really fun little vacation. And so Sunday morning, when we would typically, you know, go to church here in at Imago in Portland, we didn't. And we could have, they do live stream their services, so we could have watched the live stream, but we weren't really feeling like being on our phones. And we noticed as we drove into town the day before that there was this little church right next to, like, a block and a half from where we were staying. And we looked at it and we saw it was a Quaker church. And we realized we didn't really anything about Quakers. I definitely had the incorrect assumption that it was sort of like Amish, but maybe a little bit more, a little bit more like within society, but they'd like still wear bonnets or, you know, just kind of, be super restrictive and some turns out all wrong, completely not at all, correct. And Margaret looked up what their Sunday service is like. Do you know what a Quaker service is like?
I don't. I know a little bit about Quakerism, but probably not more than you do at this point.
Right. It's an hour-long silent meditation. There's no sermon. There's no doctrine. There's no dogma. It's just, they call it a gathering of friends. They all sit around and listen for God within themselves. And then if during that time somebody feels the voice of God compel them to stand up and speak and say what they think the people around them need to hear, they do so. And then they just sit back down and everybody quietly contemplates what was said. And there's a beat before anybody else gets up to speak. And then afterwards, you all shake each other's hands, say hi, nice to meet you. Then they talk about, you know, what's new, what's coming up, and et cetera. And then just talking amongst themselves, and then that's it. And it was, and so we were like, we got to go to this, because I'm like, this is it. I was shocked. I didn't know that what I really. It turns out I am not a Christian. I'm a Quaker.
Ooh, congratulations.
I think I'm a Quaker.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good so boy.
I gotta, you know, attend more meetings now. Sure. I've only done one and maybe learn a bit more about it before I go around calling myself that. But I just thought it was funny that, you know, because you were like, oh, you're a Christian now, Harry. And I'm like, I still think about that. It's like, it's not me. I'm not. Mm-hmm. And before that, Margaret and I were sitting in the car, taking a break from a bunch of walking around we'd done. And I can't remember why we were thinking about, it was before we were even talking about Quakerism. And we were thinking about the different denominations and sects of Christianity and how many different like groups they are and what they all mean and like what is Imago and what are they like, what's their overall message? And each one we were reading and it's like, okay, yeah, that's definitely Imago and that's this and that's that. And that's Catholicism. And that's, yeah, I think it started with Catholicism because we were like wondering about a certain thing about that. And then every one of them, every description of each one of them to me internally felt a bit icky. Like all of them are just like a little,
yep.
It's not right. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And so, but yeah, then once we were reading about Quakerism, like nothing felt icky to me. It all was like, that's right on. Like they're really into,
yeah, I want to know what hit you.
Anti-violence and capitalism. The anti-dogma, like they're like, yeah, Christ was a great follower of God, of course, like, but then full stop, we're not saying that he is God or anything like that. He didn't even really say he was God, but that's kind of not here or there. And
he did say he was his son, but yeah, well, I mean, again, son it depends of man, on depends which was on like, the book you read.
The translations and yeah, we don't know. Yeah. I wasn't there, so nope. He could have said whatever.
I'm just going on the thing that he says on the cross. But yeah,
Father,
why have you forsaken me? Yeah.
Well, yeah, but we all call. I mean, we don't all, but
yeah, well,
Father.
You know,
Father is another name for God.
Who among us, when being upon being cast the first stone, no. has not called out for their daddy?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's that aside.
And he could have been talking about, is it Abraham? It's not Abraham, is it? Who's his father?
Oh, no, I think he's further up the stack.
No.
Joseph.
Joseph, that's the word. Yep.
Yeah. But anyway. Brendan the Quaker.
Brendan the Quaker.
How lovely.
Yeah, I'm excited. So there's a meeting really close to me. There's a Thursday meeting, which is cool because I might be able to make that one. Because I still want to go to Imago. I really love the community there. And it was the whole reason I liked going and still want to keep going. And they have so many social services that are just inspiring. And I can be a part of. I can actually physically go and do things. And it's directly helpful for people in a safe and facilitated manner. And that is, that's just great. I don't have to recreate the wheel. The wheel's already going really well over here. Mm. But for my, spiritual needs, I can go internally with the Quakers and be a part of that thing. And I think that's really cool.
I think that's really cool. I am curious myself. And because I think I do believe in communion with a small c. And I like the idea of... This is going to sound... The word is not going to sound right because I don't have the right word. But the word that's popping up, which is the wrong word, is obligation. There is something about sort of going because you go. Going sure. because that is, to a degree, maybe without judgment, what is expected of you.
Mm-hmm.
But what you expect of yourself, not necessarily that being an external thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going for enrichment, you're going for, again, communion with a small c. You're going to hear about the community and what they're doing and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to potentially be enriched and have some things to consider.
Yeah.
And there's something about that sense of being drawn to that in a way that my mum was drawn to go to Sunday Mass.
Yeah.
For years until, it then became, we did the full sliding down the Catholic slide. It was every Sunday and birthdays and christenings and Christmas. And then it became birthdays and christenings and Christmas. And then it became birthdays and christenings. Oh, yeah, I don't know why I'm saying birthdays. Then it became, funerals and christenings. And so, the Sunday, the Christmas ritual. Service, like, I don't know the last time I went to one of those. I think when we moved house in 96, I think my mum might have gone once, and I don't think we went with her. I think she wanted to go. And we were at an age where I think, and my dad was like, nah. And that was it. They've got their own relationships with faith that is purely theirs.
Yeah.
But that notion of, like, without the guilt, but with a sense of, and I can't find a better word than obligation, a sense of, a feeling drawn to go because. Yeah. There is some kind of reason that is perhaps not just because it would be fun. You know, there's something a little bit more solemn there.
Yeah. It feels right.
Yeah. 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 That's the, yeah, absolutely.
And Margaret asked me after we went to the Quaker meeting and it was so adorable. She was very, I don't know if she'll mind me telling this or not, but she was very,
we'll find out.
Nervous about going. It's not that it took convincing. Like, she was self-motivated to go and wanted to go with me because I was like, I'm going. This is definitely. But both the combination of going to a new type of church in general is just like a little bit like I'm walking into the unknown. This is scary and weird. And then also going to a church in a different city is also a bit like, I'm a foreigner here and I don't belong and I'm just visiting and is this, I'm an interloper or like what kind of feeling? I don't know. I'm
possibly putting words in her mouth, but that kind of feeling. Just one of those would be kind of tolerable. I could get over it and you could get through it and be fine. But both of them together was a bit like, okay, this is too much. I don't think I can do this. And when we walked up, we were like 10 minutes early. So we like continued walking past the church and around and saw the school nearby. And it's like, okay, let's not be super early. And we were like looking at the parking lot, and we're like, okay, there's only three cars. Are we just gonna walk in on three other people in this church and be like, gonna be 40% of the congregation? And so I get it, but I was just like, it's still like, okay, whatever. And then we leave and they never see us again. So yeah. What's the problem?
Yeah.
But then afterwards, she was like, this is it. This is it.
So she felt the same way.
Yeah. And we were like, and she asked me like, why do we even want to go to Imago anymore? Why do we want to sit for a sermon when we can just listen for God? And shake. I get that completely. And it's not just the community that drives me to Imago, although that is a huge factor. I actually still really like the sermons a lot. I feel very inspired by them. I feel they're very provocative and get me to think about things in a different way and question myself and itself. And also like, I did not go to Sunday masses or church services a lot. Like, and when I did, they were always bad experiences for me. And so this is helping me very much reprogram that kind of service and that kind of situation. And I have been, especially for the past couple months, I've really been going for the capital C communion, the imagery of it being the body in Christ, the body in blood of God. Like, sure, I don't know what everybody else is thinking, but the idea that is spoken out loud is that this is the body and blood of Christ. But Christ is God, so it's of God to me. Like that's an easy leap to make. And also, like, to me, God is everything. It's you, it's me, it's this computer that we're talking through. It's just creation itself. It's not a person up in the sky giving us commands. It's everything. And the act of the ritual of coming down together and taking this little bit of solid and taking this little bit of liquid and ingesting it with intention and intention of connection, intention of not necessarily earthing, but togetherness and connection with God and connection with all things. We're all doing this little thing together. It's just ritualistic. It's really beautiful in a way. And it's been moving me. It's been like making me really feel present. And, you know, it's getting some synapses firing and getting some connections going and stuff. And so I've really been enjoying that factor. And that's not a part at all of the Quaker church, because yeah, it's a different setup. Also, I dig the worship music. This band is really good. They play good stuff, and we even, Margaret made a little playlist of all the best worship songs that they've been playing that we sing along with outside of church, and shared it with me. And I, like, sometimes I'm having a bad day, I just put that worship playlist on, dude, and it's fucking baller. Oh my God. There's some good Christian music, dude. I don't know if you believe me or not, but it's true.
I super don't.
Can I? If I send you one, will you listen to it?
Nope.
I don't
engage in it. I don't. No. I have no interest in engaging in it.
I know.
Yeah. But I'm I'm happy for you.
Thank you. Me too.
I am. I really am. Yeah. So, yeah, so you're going to look into it and maybe go find a Quaker near you.
Yeah, yeah, there's one near Reed College close to me that is supposed to meet on Thursdays, and I've got my Thursday men's group right after that, so I could it could work out really well. Then I go for a meditation. And also another thing that really resonated for me is that it's very much structured like the some of the other non-Christian events that I like to go to. So the candlelight meditation that I host or co-host is centered around a, well, we just do a 20-minute silent meditation or a guided meditation, and then some somatic experience where we either do like yoga or dance or stretching or whatever, some movement, some body thing. We'll do a reading of whatever, no dogma prescribed. It was just, you know, whatever is moving you right now. And it's been some really cool things brought together. This is some Alan Watts read and some like from Things Fall Apart and some poetry from Shel Silverstein. Shel?
Yeah, that sounds right.
That sounds right. Yeah. And some other stuff. Yeah. So, you know, it you get a variety of stuff, and then, you know, we bring food together. So we eat And so that, you know, candlelight's its own thing, but it's kind of similar, which is really fun. And also when I was going to refuge recovery meetings, like it was a Buddhist-based addiction recovery system. And so it incorporated a silent meditation as part of it. And yeah, and then this being an hour-long silent meditation, I love it. I love that that's what they've been doing this whole time. Oh my God.
They've been here the whole time.
Love it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If you look into it and go to a meeting yourself, I would love to hear about it. Love to hear your experience.
I know, I've met, I know there is a Quaker in my circle. And I remember hearing some lovely things about Quaker weddings that I don't remember anymore, but I just remember. I mean, I was a little less of the open mind back in the day. But I'm interested in learning more because I mean, an hour long feels that's a lot. Yeah, who knows? And you know, British Quaker versus American Quaker,
I'm
sure will do its own different thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I'm noticing a few shifts at the moment in how I'm interested in spending my time.
Nice. Tell me about it.
Well, And I don't know why the shift is happening, and I'm not too fussed about finding out why. But because it's good, and you know, like you don't have to keep
don't question the good things. Yeah, good things. Yeah. Unless you want to make sure that you can repeat it.
Yeah,
I like to like why am I doing this good thing so I can like make sure I do it again. But yeah,
yeah, I'm interested in. Doing a few more things again that are not necessarily working on a particular code base, you know, in all of the spare time that I have. I'm still like, it's one of those, I think, like with Podient back in the day, in the early stages, it's like, well, it's there when I'm feeling like I want to work on it. And I'm not going to drag myself over to it if I'm not feeling it right now. But then when I am feeling it, it's there for me to do some work on. Cause I just got it in a state where it can facilitate selling tickets for our singing group's end of year show. Which means being able to take money on a company's behalf and store that somewhere and all this kind of stuff. So it's like technical integrations with Stripe so that anyone else can sign up and do the same thing. So that any organization can take money for tickets and that all gets handled through Stripe. So that all, you know, did all that and got it all sort of ready out the door so that I could have something presentable to show to as a link to give to the members of the group to send to their friends and family to get them to buy tickets, which are all going to, you know, a charitable cause. So I sort of got it to that point, and now I'm like, you know, when the mood strikes, I will sit there and play. But, you know, I'm also picking up the solo microphone thing again and thinking of giving that another run, just, you know, in the same way that I've done all the sort of solo mic, one mic things before. The sort of extemporaneous 10-15 minute, whenever, you know, daily-ish, but again, with no thought other than do it when it's fun and interesting and you want to do it, and mm-hmm. don't see it as an obligation. Mm-hmm. Don't do it for anyone else other than you, and make it mm-hmm. for you. And that kind
this
of stuff.
Came from one of those. You kind of haven't been doing that since this started.
Not really.
I think.
No. Yeah. I've sort of documented a couple of little projects here and
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
But yeah, not really. But I you know, I like the short, pithy talk about a thing. And you know, yeah, so that's fun. And I spent a day sort of yesterday sort of not doing any work. I sort of meant to, but it just didn't pan out. And it was enjoyable to have the brain be a little bit freer, and feel less constrained. And I think part of that at the moment is work is looking up.
Oh, great.
You know, there is work. And
that's good.
Yeah, there, I think there will be money in the lemonade stand, or the banana stand, sorry, which is good. And yeah, possibly more to come. So that's all lovely. Yeah, like someone.
And what kind of is this, like programming
web,
work or
web work?
Web stuff.
You know, which, like, it pays well. Like, it, you know, it pays well, yeah. And it's stuff I can do.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
great. That's the dream, really. Possibly even looked into doing some voiceover work. That came through a recommendation, or someone just like pinged me to be like, "Hey, do you know anyone?" And I was like, "I mean,
you're talking
to him. I could be that one." so, you know, there was that, and then someone out of the blue contacted me via my website, which I didn't think anyone did, through the day job website, and we had a chat this morning, and like, that's a proper, like, it's one of those emails that it started off and I was like, so suspicious, I just assumed
I
it was going to be spam.
I hate that.
And it was like, no, like, as I read more, it was like, oh, no, this is actually a genuine, you know, inquiry, and it could be really good. It's exactly the kind of company or organization that I set up my CIC to work with.
Yeah.
Which is lovely. So obviously the messaging is working.
Awesome.
So, you know, little bit of a mindset shift.
Love that.
And so, yeah, starting to feel a little less guilt around what I do with my time. But also, you know, at the same time, thinking what might the possibilities be if I've got a little bit of help with the chemical balance of things. You know, one of the big... The sort of big overarching thing that I'm working on, and apparently this medication can help target, is shame. And it was really interesting yesterday. We had one of those little. I don't know if it was a full breakthrough, but it was a little like kind of moment.
Yeah.
Where I was describing the two different types of people I see in this world, and
the people that categorize things into two things, and everybody
yes,
else.
Yes, exactly. yes, there are three kinds of people in this world. The type that get off by one errors, and the type that don't.
Nice. I gotcha. That was a programming joke.
Yes, yes.
I like it.
There are two types of people in this world: the people who understand redundancy and the people who understand redundancy. I could go on for days. I'm just making these up on the fly. Anyway, right. So,
hey, Mark.
I was two kinds of people in this world, and I realized it came directly from my experience at school.
Mm.
There are mainstream kids, and thus, by extension, adults.
Uh-huh.
And there are not mainstream kids slash adults. And life taught me from a fairly young age and kept teaching me that mainstream kids are not safe.
Uh-huh.
They are judgmental and standoffish and unwelcoming and unsympathetic. And you need to seek out the company of the not mainstream kids. And you know them when you see them, you know them when you meet them. And that is, it was such a big thing, like, because I've battled with this idea of othering and feeling othered and kind of knowing, because the difficulty is, like, a lot of the, like, I knew it was all internal. Yes, there are aspects of living life with a disability that, like, you know, the world isn't, you know, made for me. It's, you know, there are aspects of life that are trickier and that are more expensive. I mean, stupid little things like, there's a local supermarket that I would love to shop at, but that particular brand of supermarket does not have, like, one of the ways they keep prices down is they do not have any kind of delivery mechanism, you know, system. And we don't have, like, we have delivery, but we don't have, like, Instacart here. So you can't just, like, have a thing where a person will go and pick the shelves. Like, that's handled by individual shops. And I'd love to shop there because it's really inexpensive. But if I want to get my, like, main shop there, I can't carry it home. And it's, you know, it's stupid stuff like that that just means living life as a disabled person is just more expensive and, you know, more annoying.
Could you get, like, a little rolly cart or something?
Would
that be hard on, like, the sidewalks or?
That's literally never been a thing that I've ever seen a human person do. What I have seen, for you used to see, don't see it so much anymore, but you used to see, like, as we would call them, old age pensioners, with something like a push, like a big bag that they'd have that they might push along the street. But I haven't seen one of those in a long time. I don't know why, but that generation seems to have died out. And I'm not sure I'm up for the indignity of that.
What's indignant about it? You're just moving stuff smartly. But, you know, you do you, man. I don't mean anything by it. I just think, what's the indignity? Because you're the only one? Put a sticker on it that says not mainstream kids.
Yeah, and thus and thus the problem, because I've just explained to you how mainstream kids are not to be trusted because they are not safe.
Yeah.
So to move through that world with that lovely gay abandon is not an option because I don't live in that world. I live in the world of the mainstream kids. Which are, you know, judgmental and
right, but every day, like, I know that I can't just reason this out of you, but I'm from my perspective, every day you're a not mainstream kid living in the mainstream kid world,
passing,
and you're passing. Is that what you're doing? Is that what you said? Okay, I mean, you're trying to, right? You think you are, maybe, but, like, when you see a non-mainstream kid, you know. So does everyone else. Like, so you're already seen.
I don't know.
You get what I mean? I don't know, is it too real?
It's not that it's too real. It's part of this is also how I think there is a difference in identity between our cultures.
Of course, yeah.
I think we may have talked about it before, where in sort of American culture, you can just sort of, you can assert your identity. And
yeah, especially in Portland.
Yeah. And that is who you are. And like, yeah. That is to be mistrusted and feared over here. And in you know, some of the cultures as well. I think there's a lot of it in Scandinavia. There's a lot of it in Australia and New Zealand, in Ireland.
Okay, but then, like, also, then what? So, okay, they mistrust you and fear you as you're walking down the street with your little rolly cart holding all your groceries, like a clever man who was smart enough to prepare for his trip.
It's a lovely framing.
What are they gonna yell at you? What's the worst that can happen? And if they do, if they yell at you, like, all right, that's their problem. They obviously are very imbalanced.
I'm gonna put a pause on here because I think we're getting into stuff where, like, this isn't your lived experience, and so it's not. Yeah, it's not something that we're gonna like.
I'm not fixing anything.
Not rational, and that's not, you know, you're presenting very good and sane rational points, but it ain't rational.
Yeah, I get you. I get you. I love you, man.
And that's the thing. All of that to say that being, you know, having this ability is cumbersome.
For sure.
And I don't know why I've managed to close that loop, but I can't remember why I was talking about
groceries,
yeah. But hey, it's, you know, whatever.
Successfully derailed.
Yes. So it was. I don't want to talk about these things. I was talking about, like, mainstream kids and not mainstream kids, and
yeah.
One of the things that and the thing that you are pointing to, and the thing that is really difficult, is basically shame.
Yeah.
It's not shame as in you did a bad thing and therefore it's not the guilt kind of shame.
Nope.
It is the shame that comes with you're not like us.
Yeah.
And, you know, I that is, yeah, apparently, there are bits in the brain that can be targeted by a certain type of SSRI
yeah,
that maybe make me have an attitude that is maybe a little bit more akin to Brendan. And that would be lovely.
That would be lovely.
You know, but I can't Brendan my way into it.
I know. And, you know, like, yeah, speaking of our very different lived experiences, one of my best childhood memories is with my uncle. I was probably between the ages of 3 and 5 and my sister 5 and 7. And with the three of us, would garden together, and my mom made us matching, sweatsuits, and my sister and I would hold on to, either of my uncle's legs as he was walking into the garden, and we'd be chanting, "We are the other people. We are the other people. We are." And that was the whole song. We just kept chanting that over and over. And I think my mom on the sweatsuits embroidered the other people's produce company on all three of our things. And, like, so we knew from a young age that we were other people, and it was celebrated.
Yes.
And that's obviously a very different lived experience.
Yeah. And it's, what's so interesting is when I've seen people who are other people, which I have written down as one word with a capital O because I like it. We are the other people.
Other people.
That doesn't always come with that level of comfort within that notion. Even as you know it and you recognize it. I remember being there's a couple of things that I remember having a conversation with, and I'm going to tell it this way, the way sort of it unfolded in my brain. Having a conversation with a fella in a, it was a guy I knew, and I was passing along some work to him, some voluntary work. And so we had a bit of a handover meeting in a really rough pub. And I hadn't really clocked how rough it was. It's just one of those. Like, it was only midday, but it was still one of those where it's like, yeah. And, you know, we had a drink, and then, you know, it was like, do you want another? And he was like, not particularly, because this doesn't feel like a really safe pub for a man in a dress. And I was like, oh shit, yeah, it's a man in a dress. I guess there is that. And so we left and we parted ways. And
so the guy you were with was in a dress, or there was, okay.
Yeah.
Wasn't sure if he was like looking around and he saw a man in a dress. It doesn't look like he's safe. No. Yeah.
I, as a man in a dress, do not feel comfortable in this pub.
For sure. Getcha.
And I also remember hanging around with a pal of mine that I did a podcast with for a number of years, who is no stranger to makeup and to having the nails did and you know, hair in prominent colours and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I actually remember on his 40th, we got asked to leave a pub or a bar because they didn't like the look of him. They let us in and then asked us to leave, which was insane. But I remember a year or so before that having a conversation with him about, we were talking about where we, you know, we're going to go for a drink. And you know, I'll just let you into my thought process, which was very quickly corrected, we might say, or I was very quickly sort of given some more education. We were, you know, talking about where we were going to drink, and we went in, and he knew what the pub was, he knew the reputation, and he knew what he looked like, and he was talking about feeling uncomfortable. And so in my head, the logical question that I ask is, and I think I tried to ask it him in a way that wasn't judgmental. It was like, well, why do you present yourself that way then?
Okay.
And his response was, well, I don't do it for them. I do it for me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, me feeling comfortable, this is how I want slash, well, it goes beyond want. It's like, this is how I express myself. This is how I feel comfortable in my own skin by, you know, by doing what I do.
For sure.
And then it is the world, and this is the tricky thing here. It's like, you can do the things that make you comfortable in your own skin, and that's okay when you're in safe spaces, but then sometimes you have to enter unsafe spaces, and the way that you present yourself is then a cause for, you know, something that you feel safe in is then something that makes other people feel suspicious and angry, because, you know, because it's something they don't understand, and so because they're not bright, they go to anger.
Sure.
And so what are you supposed to do, you know, spend 90% of your life in a skin that makes the other, not the other people, make the outside world, make the mainstream people feel comfortable. People.
Yes, yes, yes.
Or are you going to try and spend as much time as you can in the skin that makes you feel comfortable, and then have to sometimes brave the fact that the mainstream people don't get it, and it doesn't stop it hurting. And, you know, thinking, well, why can't you just? It's like, well, yeah, why don't you? Like, we all present ourselves in ways that feel comfortable to us. It's just that society has said it's okay if men wear trousers. Like, it, you know, it's normal for men to wear trousers. It's not normal for men to wear skirts. And, you know, when I'm saying that, I'm not saying that's what I believe. But yeah, like it's all a mush.
Especially when you're right next to
point.
Scotland, everybody's wearing kilts.
Like. Everyone's wearing kilts, but that's a bit more of a formal dress wear situation.
Yeah.
But
in in America, you know, like going into a pub like that treated us poorly, like we'd just be retaliatory and write a 1-star Yelp review. Unsafe space.
Use capitalism.
Yep, exactly. And as always. An alternate title for this podcast was The Non-Mainstream Kids. And correct me if I'm wrong.
Go Hawks. Oh, we've got lots of alternate titles.
Mm.